Dante said, keeping his words slow to mask his annoyance. But I still say it doesn't matter. Not when the alternative is your total destruction at the hands of the Lich. The wisdom of the Odosain lies at the core of who we are as Tenarians. This was spoken by Two, a man in his 50s with the lean-limbed build of one of the runners the Galades used to swiftly deliver messages across the rugged terrain of the Rift Valleys. If we pass it along to foreigners, and it's no longer our own, then haven't we lost who we are? How so? You'd still be right here. You fail to look deeply enough. If the process of saving ourselves requires us to destroy who we are, then what have we saved? Aside from the world. Joke all you want, one said. You're not the one being asked to surrender all of Narashtovic's treasures to outsiders. I just don't see how sharing a piece of Tanaratane can destroy Tanaratane. If anything, it will spread your influence and your prestige. Dante rested his arm on the pommel of his sword, then blinked. He reached for the handle, the gently tapered horn of a swamp dragon, and drew the blade. Purple nether forked along the black metal. One shot to his feet and thrust his finger at Dante. That's one of our swords! Right and wrong. Dante held up the weapon for them to see. It's modeled after your weapons, but I crafted it myself. Your design has saved me several times already, allowing me to find my way to the spires, where we will find a way to kill your mad wizard. Meanwhile, though I've borrowed from their traditions, the Odosain still exist, completely untroubled by my theft. And the same will be true if you teach us to be one of them. He held the sword up for another few moments. Each voice stared at the swirling nether, which continued to flow even as every other shadow lay trapped by their power. Dante let the moment linger, then sheathed the blade with a forceful click. He allowed himself a small smile. One chortled. Era sighed. Seven cleared his throat, then looked down, a touch of red coming to his cheeks. Rhetoric, Era said. You're trying to stir our guts. But has it occurred to you that sword you carry is the physical embodiment of what we profess to fear? Dante shook his head. Sensing his bewilderment, Blaze stepped up beside him, giving the audience a small bow. Forgive me for making a suggestion that's almost stupidly simple. But what if we just promise not to tell anyone else what you teach us? Five laughed some more, her belly shaking. And no man has ever lied. No foreigner has ever broken a promise to people he has no loyalty to. No, Hari, we can't accept your word as if it's made from pure gold. The main problem here is that we're not Tenarians, right? Then how about we resolve that whole mess by becoming Tenarians? This caused the voices to exchange glances. Frowning at his lap, Seven said, That would be an elegant solution, yes. But, one said, you aren't Tenarians. Look at yourselves. Your features are as fat as a blowfish. The fish aren't going to like it when that gets back to them. Surely you don't think the way a person looks determines what land they belong to. If we'd been born in Darabod, and raised as right and proper Tenarians, would you still think we were nasty Hari? A convincing counter, Five said. But irrelevant, as you weren't born in our land, nor raised as one of us. One's face bent with contempt. It's not that convincing. If you jump in the water and swim for an hour, does that make you a fish? Mostly it makes me hungry and sleepy, Lay said. I dare say that fishiness isn't defined by the specific piece of water the fish lives in. You can take a fish from one pond and put it into another, and it'll do just fine in its new home. Six eyed them, the wrinkles deepening around his eyes.
You'd become Tenarian, would you? What can you tell me about the body?
The body? It's fleshy. Some bones inside it to keep it from flopping around. An excellent way to travel from one place to another without the need for expensive horses or canoes.
I refer to the body of Tanaritain.
Yes, me too. As I was saying, something about how you're all a part of it, and you have duties to the rest of it. All pulling together, you might say, just as a body's lungs, heart, spleen, and so forth set aside their differences and work together to keep the physical body, alive and happy and so forth. So must the people of Tanaritain work together to form what you might call a body of the country. Seven was looking embarrassed again. Six applied one of the most patient expressions Dante had ever seen.
You aren't Tenarians. You could live among us for another dozen years and you might not yet be one of us. Do you suppose the Aedan Rane will give us that long to find out?
Maybe if we got something to distract him, like a large quantity of pinwheels. This is all hypothetical, isn't it? Era motioned to Dante. Would you actually pledge to serve Tanaritain when it means you'd have to sever all your ties to your homeland? You'd renounce your titles and pledge to serve as knights in the Drakebane service? Dante shifted on his feet. I have a responsibility to my people. I can't abandon them.
Then you can't become Odor Sain.
We could make it. She made a cutting motion through the air. This will never work. You can't be a master of one land and a servant to the other. Blaze shrugged at Dante. Well, damn. That trick worked with the broken herons. I have a solution.
This came from Gladig, who drew a thin, hooked knife and set it against his throat.
Once our work is finished, I will destroy myself, and my knowledge of the Odor Sain will perish with me.
Finally, we're getting somewhere.
One grinned at Dante and Blaze.
And the two of you, would you make such a pledge?
Absolutely, Blaze said. To be honest, I've been looking for an excuse to off myself ever since I found out my favorite baker closed shop.
Dante gazed across the seven waiting faces.
Do you realize how easy it would be to lie to you? We could complete our training, slay the Aedan Rane, then return to our homeland, and you wouldn't be able to do anything to stop it. You're trapped here. So, yes. I, too, promise to commit suicide once our mission is complete.
Era pressed her knuckle to her upper lip.
For some reason, I feel as if I can't trust you on this one.
One tilted his head toward her.
I'm not hearing bold ideals. I'm not hearing a compelling counter-morality for us to explore. All I'm hearing is ways for them to weasel past our beliefs. Are we ready to vote?
Several of the others nodded. From the bored and exasperated looks on their faces, Dante could tell which way the vote would swing.
Stop, he said.
And found he had nothing else.
One regarded him with heavy-lidded eyes.
Why?
Because you're about to vote no.
That's the first time you've been right during this entire argument. Voices, let's get this done with. Everyone who is convinced that the Silent Spire should train Hari in the way of the Odosain?
No hands went up. After 2 seconds, Seven lifted his arm, though he didn't look happy about it. No one joined him. Gladick laughed, a sour and caustic thing.
Look at these wise elders who condemn themselves to death.
One smirked.
The time for talking is over, priest. We've made our decision. It must have been easier to reach that decision, knowing that soon no one will be alive to write the history of your cowardice. Enough! Guards, he might look old, but that'll only make him easier to drag away.
Soldiers moved in from the sides. Blaze's hands drifted toward the scabbards on his hips. Dante laughed.
You won't train us because you fear it would lead to the loss of Tanara Tain. But what does it matter when you've already let that happen? Your culture's in its death throes.
Train us in the Odosain, and I'll save it from vanishing forever.
The soldiers paused, waiting for orders.
One swore. I told you, no more talk. The voices have spoken.
Era stood, drifting a step toward Dante. Her eyes seemed to grow sharper while the rest of her face blurred.
We should listen. I see inspiration in him, One. Don't you?
The large man glared at her in disgust, then considered Dante.
His anger relaxed. For the first time, doubt crept across his face.
Damn it. Shit and scales, I see it. Speak, priest, and be fast with it.
The idea is very simple, Dante said. The execution will be complicated. You need to put your language into writing. You need to put your ideas and your history into books. And I will help you.
Six started to speak, then coughed, his elderly eyes watering.
A servant leaned in to help him, only to be smacked away by the old man. After a gulp of air, Six found his voice.
You know nothing of Tanara Tain. You think we've never heard of writing before? Of books? We have our reasons for doing things as we do.
I understand perfectly well. What is it you once said about this, Volo? That Tanarians want their truths written in water, which naturally changes its form to suit its surroundings, rather than chiseled in stone, which can never be altered.
Close enough, Volo mumbled, wide-eyed and clearly reluctant to be dragged into the talk.
Congratulations, Six said. You listened to one thing that one of us had to say. We have no need for your writing. It's stifling. We've passed our knowledge along just fine without it.
Dante took a step to his right, looking past the towers in the direction of the distant swamps. That worked before, when everyone thought the same way that you do about the value of being able to exchange ideas with anyone willing to listen. But once a group breaks away from that, and clamps down on what can be said, they'll destroy anything they don't like. You're seeing it now with the Righteous Monsoon. They believe they have all the answers, that there's no need to pursue other ideas, that any others are a threat to them. As a result, they've already banned Donaghy Day, put an end to your daily quest for new truths. Soon they'll be imprisoning or killing the heretics who deny their faith, if they haven't started already. Even if we kill the Lich, the Monsoon will kill everything you consider Tanarian, until your former culture is as barren as these hills. All seven voices watched him thoughtfully. He raced onward, letting the idea Gladik had provoked in him unfold. The only way to protect your heritage is to write it down, so that if you're killed, your ideas and knowledge won't die with you. So that other Tanarians don't have to come to you to find your wisdom, but can share your books as easily as they'd share a meal. Books can be burned, or wear out with time, but in most ways, they are stronger than us. They never get too tired to go on. They don't need to eat. They can be hidden away for years without harm. This is how you last in the face of strife. Dante returned to the center of the shrine's floor and faced Era. As I said, the idea's a simple one, but getting it done will be as complex as any sorcery. Here's my offer. If you train us in the Odoseine, then I will bring Narashtivik's scholars to you. They'll train your own scholars and archivists. They'll show you how to craft an alphabet, to record yourselves on parchment, to fill libraries with the story of Tanara Tain. That way, you can persist through the monsoon without losing your past to the flames, so that even when the day comes that Tanara Tain eases into the past, its history will remain alive forever. Five stirred. Jowls creased with a frown.
Are you finished?
He folded his hands at his waist. I think we're all hoping the answer to that is a massive yes.
Then I call for a final vote on the matter of whether to teach the Hari the skills of the Odoseine. All those in favor?
Still meeting Dante's eyes, Five raised her right hand. Dante swung back his head in surprise. Seven was the next to follow. And then the others. Until only one remained with his hand down.
6-1, Five declared. The argument is concluded. The voices have spoken. Era, you are hereby authorized to train the four before us in the ways of the Odoseine.
8. Are you ready? Era waited until each of them had nodded their affirmation. Then you may begin your practice.
Right.
Blaze shifted his knees on the mats Era had laid out at the edge of the forest. The bleakness of the hills spread before them. He looked down, adjusted his jabat, then took a sharp breath through his nose.
Pardon my comically deep foreigner's ignorance, but did I miss the part where we were taught what to do?
No, I shouldn't think so.
That's odd, because I'm pretty sure you just told us to get to it, but what is it?
It is the Odoseine, Era said.
I've managed to pick up on that much, but aren't you to, teach us?
How should I do that?
Blaze looked at Dante.
A little help?
Oh, no.
On the mat beside him, Dante shook his head vigorously.
I think you've got the matter well in hand.
I'll admit I'm not much of a teacher myself,
unless you'd like to learn how to chug a mug of beer without spilling down your shirt.
But it seems to me that you might try teaching us the same way you taught your other students.
Era touched her finger to her lips.
Interesting. Are you my other students?
If so, I must have delivered a few too many chugging lessons, because I don't remember any of it.
If you aren't those other students, then how can I teach you the same way I taught them?
With terrific skill and aplomb?
It's critical to understanding of the Odosein that the student learns its processes on their own.
Why is that? Dante said.
She fixed her eyes on his.
Think. Why might that be?
You're a radically isolated group of practitioners of an obscure form of sorcery. The most likely answer is because you're loony mystics who've spent too much time cut off from human contact and have either gone insane or adopted unique practices that are indistinguishable from insanity. But I'm guessing that's not what you're going for.
Why are you framing that as a joke, when it's a perfectly reasonable conclusion?
Am I right?
You'd better hope not, hadn't you?
Dante leaned on one palm.
If learning the processes on your own is vital to the process itself, that suggests the Odosein is based on private revelation.
Or the very process you're engaged in right now,
Gladick said. Reasoning. Deduction. Getting mired down in silly arguments. This is sorcery, not philosophy.
Both the Nether and Aether follow predictable rules. One might even say that they are logical.
Oh yes, they're practically arithmetic. You remember that time I added 2 to 3 and it killed 20 monsoon soldiers?
You're not very smart,
Era said to Blaze.
He laughed. We've only met today,
and yet it's already like you've known me forever. A minute ago you told me you don't know anything about the Odosein, but you're wrong about that. And not only a little bit wrong, but so wrong that I have a hard time believing you're not deliberately lying.
I think I preferred it when you were calling me stupid.
How do we figure things out?
Huh?
Yes, by grunting dully until someone takes pity on us and does it for us. That's one method. But let's pretend you're a person who respects themselves.
Blaze tilted back his head, contemplating the late afternoon sky.
By beating it out of people for being too cryptic?
We reason, Dante said.
How do we begin to reason?
Era said.
Several ways. Extrapolating from personal experience. Abstracting out our thoughts. Observing repeated patterns of behavior or natural forces.
She stared at him levelly.
Let's start with personal experience. Do you suppose you can think of an experience you've had with the powers of the Odosein?
Several. He felt the blood rushing to his face. Like the one we just had 20 minutes ago.
Do you need me to keep holding your hand? Or are you ready to take a step on your own?
We don't know how you do what you do, but we've seen its results. Normally the Nether's like water. It flows easily because that's its nature. But when the Odosein is applied to it,
It becomes icy, like it's frozen in place, and you can't move it.
Are you sure that's true?
Yes, I suppose. For me. Gladick, how did you experience it?
Similarly, the old priest said. With the ether as well. Typically, one is able to bring it forth the same way that one might open the shutter in a dark farmhouse, allowing the light to spill forth upon the interior. Beneath the oppression of the Odyssean, I can still see the light outside, but it no longer shines through the open window, and the house remains dark.
Blaze shifted his weight on his knees. Normally, if I try really, really hard, I can make a little piece of nether do something that may or may not resemble what I want it to do. But when your knights are around, I don't even get the chance to fail, because the nether just sits there. It reminds me of the early parts of my training, when I'd learned to see the nether, but still hadn't figured out how to touch it.
That points us to the general mechanism, Dante said. We all agree the shadows and the light are still there. The Odyssean isn't taking them away. It makes them inert.
He lifted his eyebrows at Era.
Are we supposed to be able to reason this out further?
If I tell you no, is that because it's true, or because your belief will make it true?
Era smoothed her robes over her thighs.
When it comes to learning, most people cripple themselves by running to their teachers for help the instant things get hard. Yet, if you train yourself right, you can reason your way forward far more often than you'd think, using far less hard knowledge and evidence than you'd believe possible. Getting good at that process is vital. If you try to rely on me for all your answers, you're never going to reach them.
Dante, Gladick, and Blaze fell into a longer conversation about how they'd encountered the knights of Odyssean during earlier conflicts, specifically when they'd freed Naren from the Blue Tower, and then the confused battle at the Wound. As they spoke, Volo wriggled around on her mat like a dog seeking to bed down in the grass. Dante didn't feel as though they were making much headway, but they'd at least confirmed that the experience had always been the same, one of being unable to reach the locked-down shadows. Era hadn't been paying much attention to them until the conversation petered out to half-hearted rehashes of things they'd already rehashed twice before. Annoyed disappointment grew on her face with each moment. When she couldn't stand it any longer, she stood, knocking the grass from her robe. "You're slowing down like you've been hulled. Try this. Look out there, into the desert. You see it?" Blaze shielded his eyes with the blade of his hand, peering into the streaked black hills that started just feet away from where they were kneeling.
"You mean the freaky-looking stuff, surrounding the spires for 30 miles on all sides? I'm having to squint pretty hard here, but I think I've got it."
"Today, it's nothing but naked rock. But that wasn't always so. A long time ago, the desert was a forest."
"Where the Ursain lived," Dante said. "Before the White Lich came. Their only way to stop him from destroying them was to destroy their homeland instead."
"A simple version of the facts, but I suppose that's the best I can hope from you. It's true, though, that people lived here. Animals, wild and domestic. Trees. The whole land thrived with life of all kinds. I want you to look out there, and I want you to imagine what it was like."
"Then what?"
"Quit worrying about the then before you've even started the now. You've been whining that I wasn't giving you any instructions, and now that I'm trying to give you a lesson, you can't even do what you're told?
I'm sorry, Bel Era. You can apologize to me by doing your damn job.
Gods, teachers always make the worst students.
Dante inhaled and exhaled, clearing his mind in the same way he emptied it for the arrival of the ether. He stared out into the field of jagged rock. It looked unreal, like a glimpse from a hellscape inversion of the mists. A layman might think it was impossible that such a place could once have been a bountiful forest. But Dante had seen other places. Time had changed just as much. Plains into mountains, forests into deserts. The only reason the earth looked eternal was because a person's span upon it was so brief. His first thought of how this place had once looked was the pine forest surrounding Narashtavik, with their towering rough trunks and the carpets of slippery needles on the forest floor. But this was obviously wrong. It had to have been closer to the great leafy forests of Malan, although probably different from those as well, as it often snowed in Malan, and he wasn't sure that it ever did in Tanara Tain. The jungles of the Plagued Islands, then, with their flowering vines, thickets of bamboo, and lush trees. He thought that might be closer, at least. Then again, the Ossain and their forest had ceased to exist something like 1,000 years ago. Had the trees and flowers back then even looked like the ones that existed today? From what he'd pieced together, the people from that time period were nothing like the ones that were here now. Did everything change over time? Or were birches always birches? And bears were always bears? And specific groups of people were the only ones that didn't last? The sun tilted westward. As it went, the wind picked up, driving at them in uncertain bursts. As Dante contemplated what type of forest might have covered the area, he kept a general awareness of the nether to see if this little exercise was affecting it, but it looked perfectly normal. It wasn't long before his mind started to wander. First to what the purpose of this exercise might be, and then to ways to stop the White Lich. He looked up and saw that Era was gone. The winds were now gusting, as if enraged, blowing in every speck of dust from the rocky wasteland, stinging their faces and eyes. A servant arrived, his face masked with an almost translucent piece of fabric stretched over a small wicker frame. He indicated that they should follow him back to the Tower of Three, which Era commanded, or stewarded, or however it was that the voices considered themselves to govern. The tower door was solid iron, covered in symbols that resembled the runes of the Rhea Lace. Dante had the immediate suspicion that there was a layer of iron within the walls as well, built to keep out or, more likely, at least slow down the lich. The foyer's ceilings were 15 feet high, the semicircular space filled with mats, low tables, and glasswork typical of most of the nicer residences and establishments elsewhere in the country. Era had been speaking with another servant. Seeing them, she motioned the servant to depart. "Did any revelations come to you from out of the desert?"
"That depends," Blay said. "Does 2 tons of dust count as a revelation?"
Gladick's lower eyelids were sagging with exhaustion.
"How long might it take us before we are able to command the power of the Odosain?"
"You're asking me to guess when you, a person I'd never met before today, is going to be able to learn a skill you might not ever learn?"
"If you are able, yes."
"I'm not." It takes as long as it takes.
But will it be soon enough to stand against the Aedan Rane before it's too late?
How should I know?
She jerked her thumb at the staircase. If these are the best questions you've got, we're done here. Go get some dinner, some sleep, whatever it takes to make you worth teaching.
After that rather demoralizing speech, they were led upstairs to simple stone chambers furnished with rugs and tapestries, where they were fed bread. Having not eaten anything since entering Aerososis, Dante hadn't realized how much he'd missed it. Stewed beans in a thick, salty sauce, and fruit tarts that tasted both sweet and sour. The staff removed their dishes as soon as they were finished. One remained to show them about their rooms, finishing at the doorway, where he indicated a chain hanging from a hole in the wall.
The room should not be left. If assistance is required, pull this chain.
Blaze gave an experimental tug of the small brass links. What's it do?
A bell is rung. A servant is summoned.
A fellow is thanked for the explanation.
The servant gave him a blank look and left. Their beds were the typical wicker frames that could be secured against the wall by day. Dante rolled onto his thin mattress and was immediately so weary that he wasn't sure he could get up again. Blaze blew out the candle, which was neither tallow nor beeswax, and smelled like a variety of stout, shiny plant they'd seen here and there in the swamps, and shuffled across the dark room to his bed.
We're sure this isn't a prank of some kind.
Blaze climbed onto his mattress.
The other Odosein had to go through this as well.
Why don't we ask them and find out? Dante said.
Oh, wait. There aren't any left. Which is exactly why we have to go through this in the first place.
Dante typically woke up a few times during the night, but on that occasion he didn't stir until a servant swung open the door just before the sun broke from the horizon. Dante had slept for a good 10 hours, but felt almost drunkenly groggy, and his legs and back were so sore from the long march the day before that he was obliged to soothe his aches with nether on his way to the privy. Breakfast was flatbread stuffed with potatoes and beans. There were few spices to speak of, just a bit of salt and herbs. It was immensely different from the heavily spiced fish, root mash, bananas, and rice they ate in the swamps. Did the people of the spires cling so fiercely to the idea of Tenarian culture because they understood that they weren't truly a part of it? After eating, Era arrived to lead them back to the boundary between the forests of the spires and the bleakness of the hell-painted hills, where she instructed them to think about the lost forest once more. Within an hour, everyone but Gladik was fidgeting. A little after that, Blaze began to snore. Era cursed and rolled her eyes. She gave Blaze a shove.
Wake up, you idiot! If you want to sleep the day away, you can do that back in the swamps.
Blaze rubbed his eyes. I wasn't doing a very good job imagining the old place by myself. I thought dreaming about it might help.
Are you being serious?
That depends. Will believing in what I said get me out of trouble?
She got up and walked back to the Seven Towers.
Well done, Dante said. Next time, try killing yourself. You can tell her that you thought you could imagine the forest better from within the mists.
Blaze got up, planting his palms on the small of his back and stretching backwards.
If I have to spend one more minute imagining a bunch of stupid trees that died 1,000 years ago, I will kill myself.
What are we even doing? How is this going to teach us to nullify sorcery?
I don't know,
But given that Era is one of only 7 people authorized to teach the Odosein, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume she knows what she's doing.
I'd rather enjoy the training at Pocket Cove again.
Didn't they try to drown you? Make you die of exposure?
Exactly.
Era didn't come back until they'd been brought their lunch, another meal of stuffed flatbread. She directed them to continue envisioning the forest. They obeyed dutifully.
I imagine you're growing so bored you're thinking about killing yourself, she said after another hour. First of all, that would be stupid. The smart play would be to kill me. Second, since repeated failure is toxic to the will to go on, and you don't seem to be able to do anything but fail, let's try a new course.
Take up your foul magics. Dante reached out to the nether. Blaze made a clumsy swipe at it while Gladig summoned a perfect pattern of light. Without so much as a twitch, Era locked the 2 talents in place. Dante gave a peremptory tug at the shadows. Era lifted her hand, palm up.
See that?
The part where you made 3 extremely dangerous people look like sad children, Dante said. Yes, I might have noticed.
But did you watch it?
I didn't know that it was coming.
Do you take that same mindset to a sword fight, or when you're dueling one of the other warlocks?
Of course not. That's a fight for my life. Era laughed mockingly.
You're working to combat the Aiden Rane, and you don't think it's a fight for your survival? Your life is on the line every second of your training.
And so is mine. And so is the life of everyone in this country.
When you're with me, you watch and you listen. Always.
Do you understand?
Dante nodded, keeping any bristle out of his voice. What was I supposed to see?
Watch again. And tell me.
She ordered them to draw on their abilities again. Just as before, she slammed down on them, sealing the ether and the nether as firmly as the world's own skin. Dante glanced at Gladik and Blaze. They shrugged and shook their heads. Era repeated the process a third time, then a fourth, and a fifth. She scratched her armpit.
See anything yet?
You're locking it down, Dante said. If there's more to be seen, I'm missing it.
Then maybe you should look harder.
Or would you rather go back to imagining the forest?
Please, no.
Blaze covered his heart with one hand, extending the other for mercy.
At least have us imagine a hot springs. Somewhere people might like to bathe. I guarantee you I'll be able to describe it to you in perfect detail.
Era snorted, but seemed at least half amused.
We'll try a few more. But like I said, too much failure in too little time turns bold men into timid children.
Yet Dante got nothing out of the next few attempts, either. Era had them contemplate the hills some more while she thought, or pretended that she was thinking while she was actually punishing them for their stupidity, then snapped her fingers.
I'm stopping you from accessing your unholy magics, she said.
But there are ways for you to slip past me.
You're going to try.
Dante bit his lip. If Blaze had similar thoughts of discretion, he promptly ignored them.
I suppose it's too much to ask how we might do that.
Era didn't bother to respond. She motioned for them to summon their powers. They complied, and she once more froze the light and shadows in place. Dante bull-rushed toward the Nether, meaning to batter right through whatever she was doing. But it was like running full tilt into a wall. Sensing that was a dead end, he retreated, whispering to the Nether with all the subtlety he could summon. He thought he sensed a quiver. But as soon as he turned toward it, it went as still as the rest of it. No amount of wheedling could get it to twitch again. Era gave no sign she'd seen anything move at all. Blaze begged off 5 minutes later, his powers exhausted. Gladick and Dante persisted for a good while longer, getting to a whole lot of nowhere. With the day running short, Era stopped their practice, told them to imagine the forest, and walked away. When dusk fell, the servant arrived to bring them to dinner. Blaze clapped his hands.
At last! Something I'm good at.
Dante barely tasted his food, lost in contemplation of what Era had attempted to show them so far. Was the business about imagining the lost forest merely a thought exercise to push them into the correct mindset to be able to see whatever it was that Era was attempting to show them? Or was it an important exercise in its own right? Furthermore, if she was serious that there was still a way to reach the Nether when the Odosain was opposing you, then wasn't it possible that, even if they learned the skill themselves, the White Lich would still be able to muster his sorcery against them? He didn't say anything of this latter doubt. Yet he would have bet everything he owned that Gladick had already arrived at the same question. The third day followed the same schedule as the second. Dante shouldered on as best he could. Volo couldn't access either the Nether or Aether, and spent nearly the entire day gazing out into the fiery wastes. Blaze imagined the occasional joke or jocular complaint. While Gladick smirked more and more as the day wore on, Dante thought it had little to do with Blaze's efforts and more to do with the old man's growing conviction that they were doomed to fail, squandering their final days on nonsensical lessons while the White Lich continued his inexorable advance from the depths of the swamps. It was both cruel and merciful that every day had to end eventually. That day was no exception. As they parted ways, Era didn't even bother to insult them. She just shook her head and headed to her tower. If anyone said a word at dinner, Dante didn't hear it. They retired to their quarters. Blaze tossed a mat against the wall and sat on it with a heavy thump. Here's an unpleasant question. How long do we stick around here getting nowhere until we cut our losses and move on? Dante unfolded his bed from its ties. To what? Admitting we were wrong and asking the Lich for jobs in his new empire? I told you it was going to be unpleasant. I wonder if we aren't meant to learn a thing, Gladick said. Perhaps the Odosain are toying with us, teaching us nonsense until we grow so frustrated we leave of our own accord. Dante flicked a beetle from his sheet. Why would they do that? To prevent us from reaching the inconvenient conclusion that we can never learn their skill in time, and that the only way to confront our foe is to bend the Odosain to our will by force, and make them come with us after all. I think you're mistaking this for the sort of thing that you would do. But now that Gladick had planted the thought in him, Dante couldn't evict it from his mind. It was a long time after the candles were out before he fell asleep. Their fourth day, at the Silent Spires, opened to an unbroken sheet of wind-hustled clouds. It was drizzling, and the grass was wet, but Era took them out to the boundary anyway. "The forest is still out there," she declared. "Find it, and you'll be on your way." Dante sighed in a way that could have been mistaken for meditative breathing, and closed his eyes. He smelled the rain on the leaves. Somehow, it hadn't occurred to him before, but there were still some trees in the hell-painted hills, weren't there? Right there in the silent spires. He opened his eyes and swiveled his head to gaze at them. Once he'd committed them to memory, he closed his eyes again and used them as his model for how he imagined the old forest must have looked. Whenever his attention wandered, he nudged it back to the exercise. Half an hour into it, as he was imagining himself walking through the barren hills, with the woods sprouting up around him as he went, he opened his eyes. They didn't have to learn the Odosein themselves, did they? Not if they could find a way for the voices to be able to leave the sanctuary of the spires without dropping dead. Era walked up behind him. "What is it? What do you see?" Dante snapped his eyes shut. "Tall trees. Like these ones here." "That's it." "There are animals, too. Squirrels. Things of that nature." "Right," she said. "Keep looking." He did, but was beyond relieved when she finally called a halt to their activity, if you could call it that. Blaze stood, walking in small circles. "I don't think I could spend more time thinking about forests if I was one." Gladick stretched out his spindly legs, rubbing his right hip with his left hand. "Bell, Era, I can no longer hold my tongue. I see no sign that we're making progress toward our goal. Am I wrong?"
"Probably not," she said.
"Then why not offer us specific guidance? Why not teach us what we're looking for and how we might find it?"
"Did you not listen the first time I told you?
Is that why you're having such trouble with this?"
"If we wanted to smother you, we'd use our hands, not our dogma. Find your own way or give up trying."
Dante got to his feet. "It's hard to find your way when you don't even know what your destination is. At least give us some direction." Era's face radiated scorn.
"What do you think these exercises are? A joke? A merciful way to let you spend your last days dreaming about peaceful woods before the Aiden Rane comes to stomp the life from your body? I'm giving you what you need to learn. If you're not getting it, blame yourself.
Why let us wander in circles when you know a threat like that is on its way?"
"You want me to act as an institution? To hand down my precious knowledge from on high? To hell with that. Institutions only stray further and further from the truth they once held, lost in the swamps of their dogma, drawn astray by charlatans and profiteers. The only way to remain pure is to get every new student to reconfirm the truth for themselves."
"That's not always true. I run one of the largest institutions in the North. It's been around for centuries, and we're still dedicated to the pursuit of what's true."
"Are you, priest of the 11 and 1 gods?"
Dante folded his arms. "Why do you keep calling me that?"
"Because I think it's hilarious that you Northerners need an entire army of gods just to explain to you that some things are right and others are wrong. Tell me, defender of dogma, have you never found anything in your endless scriptures that rang false? That didn't mesh with what your own eyes were showing you?
Sometimes, yes, but...
Shut your mouth!
You know I'm right, but will defend your institution to the death because that's what they do to you. They enslave you, blind you, twist you from supporting truth to supporting them. We make you find knowledge for yourself. Does that make it tougher for you? Too fucking bad. Because in doing so, you're constantly bringing us new wisdom and exposing the falsehoods within our beliefs.
Don't move too quickly now.
Blaze held out a warning hand to Dante.
I'm afraid she's just disemboweled you.
Era switched to the second exercise, flipping on and off the influence of the Odosein while the others watched. When she decided she'd punished them with this for long enough, she moved on to clamping down on their powers while they attempted to sneak, wriggle, or wrest themselves free. Volo swung her mat to face the fiery hills. Dante felt bad for her. She couldn't participate in anything involving sorcery, meaning she likely wasn't going to have much at all to do once they got into the swing of things. She couldn't make it back through the hills without them either. Even if she tried, she had nowhere to go. She'd broken away from the rebellion she'd been a part of, a move that must have cost her most of her friends. As far as he knew, she had no family, although he felt mildly guilty for not being sure. A pebble struck him in the face. He flinched. Much too late. Era bounced another pebble in her right hand. He gave a nod of apology. She told them to reach for their sorcery, and he did so. A servant was making his way from the towers to bring them their midday meal. Before he got to them, Volo shot to her feet. She scrabbled away from the border so hard that she fell on her rear in the grass. Face contorted with panic, she continued to kick herself away from the hills. Era swept herself to her feet, seeming to close on the girl in a single stride.
What did you see?
Bola tipped her head toward Era, staring up at her with spooked eyes.
It. I saw it.
Speak like we're not privy to every one of your thoughts.
The forest. The people. They were right there. And they were there, and it was like I wasn't me anymore, and...
Era slapped her across the face.
Do you think it's useful to babble like you've been kicked in the head?
Slow down, and calm down, and think through what you just saw.
Quickly now, before you lose it.
Anger flashed across Volo's face, but it was gone as fast as it had appeared. Absently, she rubbed her cheek, gazing into the wasteland.
I was sitting here, and I was thinking about how it must have looked back then, and how it would look if it came back. And then it was like...
She rolled her hand through the air.
I saw these flashes out on the rocks. Bits of gold. And then everything lurched and I was still looking out at the hills, except they were covered in trees. People were there too, singing to each other as they took water from a stream. Only I didn't recognize any of the words. The people didn't look right either. They looked hairy.
What else did you imagine?
That's just it, Bel Era. I don't think I was imagining anything. It was like I was there.
Then what?
One of the men at the stream looked at me. He looked so surprised. I know that he could see me. That's when the vision popped, just like a soap bubble.